the oracle concerning Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amoz saw. Lift up a standard on the bare hill. Raise your voice to them. Wave the hand that they may enter the door of the nobles. I've commanded my consecrated ones. I've even called my mighty warriors, my proudly exulting ones, to execute my anger. A sound of tumult on the mountains, like that of many people. A sound of the uproar of kingdoms, of nations gathered together. The Lord of hosts is mustering the army for battle. They're coming from a far country, from the farthest horizons. The Lord and his instruments of indignation to destroy the whole land. Wail, for the day of the Lord is near. It will come as destruction from the Almighty. Therefore, all hands will fall limp, and every man's heart will melt. They'll be terrified. Pains and anguish will take hold of them. They will writhe like a woman in labor. They will look at one another in astonishment, their faces aflame. Behold, the day of the Lord is coming, cruel with fury and burning anger, to make the land a desolation. And he will exterminate its sinners from it. For the stars of heavens and their constellations will not flash forth their light. The sun will be dark when it rises, and the moon will not shed its light. Thus I will punish the world for its evil, and the wicked for their iniquity. I will also put an end to the arrogance of the proud and abase the haughtiness of the ruthless. I will make mortal man scarcer than pure gold, and mankind more than the gold of Ophir. Therefore, I will make the heavens tremble, and the earth will be shaken from its place at the fury of the Lord of hosts in the day of his burning anger. And it will be that like a hunted gazelle, or like sheep with none to gather them, they will each turn to his own people, and each one flee to his own land. Anyone who is found will be thrust through, and anyone who's captured will fall by the sword. Their little ones also will be dashed to pieces before their eyes. Their houses will be plundered and their wives ravished. Behold, I'm going to stir up the Medes against them, who will not value silver or take pleasure in gold. And their bows will mow down the young men. They will not even have compassion on the fruit of the womb, nor will their eye pity children. And Babylon, the beauty of kingdoms, the glory of the Chaldeans' pride, will be as when God overthrew Sodom and Amorah. It will never be inhabited or lived in from generation to generation, nor will the Arab pitch his tent there, nor will shepherds make their flocks lie down there, but desert creatures will lie down there, and their houses will be full of owls. Ostriches also will live there, and shaggy goats will frolic there. Hyenas will howl in their fortified towers, and jackals in their luxurious palaces. Her fateful time also will soon come, and her days will not be prolonged. Everything that can be is ruined. Everything that can be bad is listed. And it is one thing after another. If it's not one thing, it's another. It's animals. It's infiltrators and invaders. It's war. It's economy. It's overthrow politically. What a bad day. Remember, this is Political Action 101. What's happening? We've got the Assyrians who are coming to battle against the Judeans. The Syrians and the northern kingdom have joined up together to try to fight, and they're inviting Assyria. Assyria won't have anything to do with them. They're going to wipe out everybody if they can. The Babylonians, they're coming next. They're the next big gun. They're east of the Assyrians, southeast really, and they are going to be the big guns who come in after them. The Persians and the Medes are also going to have their time. So the world is, we think the world today is a battle zone, especially what's called the Middle East. Hello, that's what it was in the 8th century BC. That's what it was in the 7th, 6th, and 5th century BC, because Ishmael is a wild donkey of a man, and it is custom and its continual custom to fight with himself. That's good news for Jewish people. When they're fighting each other, they're not fighting us. In this situation, however, of Isaiah chapter 13, the Babylonians are going to get theirs. It's going to go on into chapter 14 as well. But it introduced, the section is introduced in verse 1 with the oracle, a word that's not used very often. It's used in Nahum and Habakkuk and Zechariah. It's parallel, I suppose, to the word davar, the word that would come. But it's an oddly translated word, oracle, prophecy, the declaration. This is an important biblical term that has to do with a vision, and it's usually a vision of trouble. It's not, I had a vision, and all the world was dancing together. This is not what the word oracle would ever be. It is a word that usually comes with devastation and trouble. And it is well said here in chapter 13. Lift up a standard, a banner, a ness. So this is a genre. It's part of chapter 7 through 39, which is a lot of narrative. But remember, we've seen a lot of poetry as well. And I love that part. But this is a declaration like most prophets would have given. Lift up a standard or a ness on the bare hill. What does that tell you? What's a bare hill? Why do we even mention that? It's already been ruined. It's already wiped out. So if it's a bare hill, when you go to Ireland or Scotland or even the Southern Highlands or Dunedin, what are you going to see? You're going to see gorgeous, verdant hills. You go to Tassie like you were a couple weeks ago. Everything is lush and green. A bare hill says, well, that's not producing anything. It's not the valley where you expect crops, but it's the hill where you expect trees and beautiful green life. It's nothing. It's emptied already. So lift up a standard up there. It will be so obvious as a declarer to both fallen Israel and now to Babylon. Remember, Isaiah was supposed to prophesy, as he said in the beginning, to Judah and Judea, not to Babylon. So that he's talking to a foreign government is unusual, but it's not unique. It's just limited. But again, he's also talked to Israel a bit. He has communicated a little to the northern tribes. Wave the hand that they may enter the doors of the nobles. This, I almost see it. You ever stand in front of those electronic doors that open and it doesn't open and you wave, trying to do anything to wave your hand so that the censor will see you? And that's exactly what he's saying here. Wave the hand. This was a raising of the hand. Those of you who go to charismatic churches know that you raise your hand to sing praises to the Lord, but raising your hand in biblical terms includes a lot of other things like swearing. And we even see that in the courts, don't we? When you raise your hand, I swear, raise your hand, put your hand on the Bible, something like that. I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, things like that. Well, in the same way, this waving of the hand is a way of communicating to the nobles that they would open the doors. And when you open the door, when the nobles open the door, they're inviting you into the top level of leadership. And now God says these words to them. My holy ones, my Jews, my saints. Isn't that it? The Kudoshai, these Kadosh people, are holy. And God has commanded us. I've even called my mighty ones. And mighty are the Gibor, the mighty warriors, Giborai. What word did we have already? Who was already called?
Nobles.
Gibor. Yeah, the one who would come, who would be mighty God, El Gibor. So it's these people who are obviously following the Messiah who are mighty warriors. Proudly exalting ones to execute my anger. So God uses saints, he uses angels, he uses people who are dedicated to him to execute his justice on the earth. Wow, that's kind of scary. Wow. Because you know, if you know you, that you're not so holy, and you know you're not so mighty, and that he uses us at any time, at any in any way, is pretty remarkable. By the way, the Gates of the Nobles reflects, I think, the Song of Deborah from Judges, which we talked about long ago. The sound of tumult in verse 4 and the sound of the uproar is similar to, we've seen other prophets talk about this, thunderous noise. Joel especially talked about they rush on the city and they're rolling in like thunder. This army against whoever is up against God. See, here's the thing. We looked last week about those who whom God uses to execute judgment on the Jewish people will also receive compensatory judgment. Even though they are used by God to judge Israel, they're going to also get theirs. Why? Because they're not behaving well. So God uses all kinds of personnel to execute his judgment. And it sounds like thunder, a sound of tumult on the mountains. The word tumult is hamon. Hamon is a multitude. So it could just be a whole lot of folks traveling over the hill. And it's kol. It's the voice of hamon, the sound of tumult on the mountain. So it sounds like one voice. And we see that in movies, or we see that when, God bless, when we see the New Zealand football team go up against the Australian football team this weekend, we're going to hear one voice doing the haka. All right? And that's designed to be a sound of tumult over the hill. It is designed to be an intimidator. That's exactly what this is reflecting. Like that of many people, a sound of the uproar, the word is noise, sha'on, of kingdoms. So it's not just one group. It's in fact of nations. In fact, Hebrew, goyim, gathered together. So here's all these folks who are sounding an alarm against, and who the Lord of hosts is mustering the army for battle. This is a real war, milchama. This is not just a skirmish. This is a real war. It's a real war. They're coming from a far country, from the farthest horizons, the Lord and his instruments of indignation to destroy the whole land. There is not going to be anything left. By the way, the word indignation, do you remember saying that again and again in a particular Jewish holiday when we read? You can guess. It's at the Passover Seder when we talk about what God did and how he was filled with indignation against Pharaoh and Egypt. That sound, when I read this, said, hey, this is the same bother, this aggravated assault that God has in him such that he has to demonstrate his hostility against people. Look, God is patient. He loves people. But when he's fed up, he's fed up. And there comes a day. Look, long-suffering is patience. Yes. God is long-suffering, but not eternally suffering. He suffers a long time, but not forever. And when he's done, suffering, meaning permitting, doesn't mean he's hurt, I guess it does, but long-suffering means he's allowing things to go on and on and on until he doesn't. That's it. When he gets aggro, you don't want to be on the other side of that hostility. Because there comes a day when he's going to destroy, what does it say in verse 5? The whole land. Kol ha'aretz. Kol ha'aretz. Kol, not a thing is left. That's a different kol than the voice. This is kol meaning everything.
Yeah.
So what does he say? Wail, yalal, you know, helilu, kikarov, yom Adonai, because the day of the Lord is karov, very near. This is the day of Yahweh. This is not the day of Adonai. This is the God who has every covenant under control. And when you mess up, buckle your seatbelt. It will come as destruction from the Almighty. Now, there's all kinds of controversy as I read the commentators on this one. because it seems to me pretty straightforward. Mi Shaddai Yavo, from El Shaddai, right? The Almighty God. But they look at the word which precedes it, Keshod. Keshod is this destruction. There's coming Shod, which is from the word Shaddad, Mi Shaddai. Do you hear it? Shaddai, Shaddai, Shaddad. And so the commentators say that the word Shaddai, like El Shaddai, comes from Shaddad, meaning destruction. And he is the destroyer. So some versions of the Bible say it will come as destruction from the destroyer. Others say that Shaddaiim, breasts, are what informs the word Shaddai, because he is the fruitful God of the Genesis account and the Job account. He's called El Shaddai principally there. Very interesting, I think, that he is the providing God, like a mother with breasts. Probably, etymologically, the word simply comes from Yesh Dai, there is enough. Like we sing on Passover, Dayenu. So Yesh, there is, Dai, there is enough. Yesh Dai. So he's the God who provides, he is enough for us. There's all kinds of possibilities with that. I don't agree with the Shaddad,
the destroyer,
but it can work, especially in the poetic style of Isaiah. Okay, I'll give that to him. Our version of the Bible translates it Almighty. I'm more comfortable there because it's simply the word Shaddai. Either way, it's the day of Yahweh. God's about to do something. It will come as comprehensive destruction from him who is the one who wants to provide for us. We're going to really see that in chapter 14, but not tonight. Therefore, all hands will fall limp, and every man's heart will melt. Nothing can stand before him. This sounds exactly like Revelation, when everybody was crying out to the heavens to protect us from the devastation that was comprehensive there. They will be full of terror. And it's a word, Baal, that has to do with dismay and terrifying and hastening. It is not a word that says, yeah, I was a little afraid. It is complete fear. Look what's taking over in their body and their soul and their spirit. Pains and anguish and terror. There's not a place in your reserve of your humanity, your personality. There's no place in your person which is not being challenged with fear. That is not the way God really wants us to live. So why is this coming on the Babylonians? If God loves Babylonians, why does he do this to them? He's a just God. And therefore, when the Babylonians enact problems and pain and anguish and terror on people, God will compensate for that by recompensing to them just what they dished out. The Indian people get that into some odd term of karma. We know that the apostle wrote that we will reap what we have sown. And Yeshua makes that very clear as well, that a man will be judged according to his works. So the way we live is the way we're going to be judged. You will, Yeshua said, be judged the way you do judge. Which is why he said, don't judge, so that you are not judged in return. The way we live, the way we act towards other people, is the way we're going to cop it in return. Look what's going to happen to them in verse 8. It is a horrible description of writhing and travailing like a woman in labor. That doesn't mean they're bringing forth anything. It just means they are in the deepest pain there is. And they'll look at one another in astonishment. Their faces, yeah, it's all aflame. It's an odd word. Yeah, I mean, that's what the commentators say, that there's some kind of judicial process happening. We saw that with Nadav and Avihu, the two elder sons, the eldest sons of Aaron, who, according to tradition, were burned from the inside because they brought a strange fire to God, Leviticus 16:15-16. When you see them bringing that fire, according to the story, Talmudic story, they were burned from the inside. And it's possible that that kind of justice is being enacted here on the Babylonians as well. But they're looking at one another, gobsmacked in our term, astonished, shocked, unbelievable, astounded. And then the word which Isaiah uses over and over to introduce new sections, but not to introduce new thoughts. Verse 9, Hine, behold, Yom Yahweh Ba. I mean, you can't get this more as a superscript for a paragraph. This is the most glorious thing. Hey, behold, yo, hey, don't miss this. Day, really the day, doesn't say the, but the day of the Lord is coming. It is the simplest. I mean, every child can understand this. It's this, that simple form of the language so that you get it. It's not just a random act of nature violence. It's not Mother Nature. It's Father God. This is what he has declared to happen. It will happen. And look how he describes it. It's cruel. It has fury and wrath. It's got anger that's burning out of the nose. This is a stink in his nostrils. We're going to see that phrase later on about religion that is wrong. To make the land into, well, there it is, l'shama, into a desolation. Another word for horror. Saturday is Halloween. And for some reason, it's growing in popularity that you're supposed to put ghoulish things. Two of my neighbors across the street from me now have whispers of gossamer white threads going all around their house to look like spider webs, but really ghoulish things. They've got hanging, blinking red lights in a ghost, and they've got little tarantulas, obviously play, you know, plastic tarantula. And they're looking more and more wicked. And I imagine if we go to certain areas, Newtown on Saturday, we go to the city, we go to, I don't know where we will go, but I'm sure that there will be an increase in violence and there will be an increase in, I want to say, wild acts of misbehavior. It's not only related to the rugby. It's not only related to the drinking. It will be related to Halloween. And Halloween is a ruinous holiday. There's nothing good about it. A kid goes out and gets candy. That's lousy for him, right? And it was trick or treat. Give me a treat or I will perform a trick on your house. And I will throw paint on there, or I will throw eggs on your car or whatever. Neither of which is good. Give a kid candy, give a kid a 5-cent piece, okay. Give him a dollar, whatever you want to do, that's okay. But really, they're coming around, if you don't give me a treat, I'm going to trick you. And when did it start? It was All Hallows Even, evening before All Hallows Day. Hallow meaning All Saints Day. The 1st of November, according to some people's tradition, is All Saints Day, a day to recognize all the holy people who've gone before. So like Mardi Gras comes out the night before Lent, like some people misbehave the night before Yom Kippur so that they can have a really good repentance on that day. Makes no sense to me, but some do that. It would be a desolation and extermination, and it's going to get worse as we see it unfolding. This fury and cruelty and anger is representing those who misbehave just to be misbehaving. Maybe that's why some of the commentators say that destruction comes from Shaddai, the destroyer, and I can give that to them. So this Shamad is coming. Yashmid Mimena, it's this extermination will come from it. This is the most ravishing that you can get. It's a horror in every sense of the word. Because the stars of heaven, verse 10, and their constellations will not flash forth their light. In other words, natural things are gone, as well as supernatural things. The sun will be dark when it rises, and the moon will not shed its light. How does that happen? Well, it can only come from eclipses or from cloud cover, fog, smog, or people are blinded. One way or the other, you are not going to see natural beauty. Thus I will punish the world. There's the word pakad again. We're going to see it over and over again. It's not because I'm a random God who says, next week I'm going to punish the South Americans. This week I'm going to punish people from Parramatta. Nope. This week it's the Babylonians. Why? Because of its evil. So anybody who lines up with evil is going to cop it. If you line up with good, you'll cop that. That is, you'll be benefited. And the wicked, verse 11, for their iniquity. That's just a typical parallel. I will also put an end to the arrogance of the proud and abase the haughtiness of the ruthless. Not a theme we haven't seen, a theme we're going to see to the end, that the high are brought low and the low are lifted up. This is God's plan to make sure that everybody is not on a level playing field, but that everyone will get what they deserve. He will lift up the lowly. That's a great word for us who desire to be lowly. Verse 12, I'll make mortal man scarcer than pure gold. When I was first looking at gold prices, it was around $50 an ounce. Now it's $1,200 an ounce. That's because those who have it are holding on to it. So supply and demand, there's less supply. And what he's saying here is mortal man is going to be less in supply than the purest of gold. That makes it very worthwhile. But it also is clearly just saying that there will be a devastation on mortality. Men will become mortal very visibly. Will this be, what you say, a nuclear war? It could be. Could be the devastation of that, which would cause the sun to not be visible. So, verse 13, you see the rumbling of heavens. The earth is shaking from its place at the fury of the Lord of hosts in the day of his burning anger. So this day of the Lord is not a day to say, yippee, here he comes. This is the day of God's judgment. And it's not the final judgment, which we see in the book of the Revelation, but it's a judgment on the nation of Babylon for what they've done against not just Jewish people, but all people. They're horrible. They are. And it will be like a hunted gazelle or like sheep with none to gather them. They will each turn to his own people and each one flee to his own land. This gives me an idea that the people who have, there's people running away from the swords and the chariots of the Babylonians. Everybody trying to return. And the people who get caught will be like a hunted gazelle. What's that YouTube that's going around of an elephant with a tiger? No, a lion. Lioness on its back, and somehow the little elephant is surrounded by lions. I don't know. I was thinking of the movie The Lion King, and the jackals. What are the hyenas that were surrounding the lion at the last? Not the good king, but one of the bad ones. The uncle. I don't remember their names. Scar? Yeah, who's surrounded by hyenas. You'd think, well, lions can take out hyenas, every one of them. But this YouTube video showed me this elephant taking on a whole pride of lions and winning, chasing them away. I was really proud of that elephant. I was cheering him on. I had no idea how it was going to end, but he seemed to do pretty well, or she, I don't know. And you see that at the end of this chapter, the hyenas and jackals, verse 22, howling in their fortified towers and jackals in their luxurious palaces. Her fateful time also will soon come, and her days will not be prolonged. Huh. So the winner should have been somebody else, but in this case, it's the hyenas. You'd think that the strong would take them out. But that makes sense when the land is barren, that wild animals can actually override the usual call of nature and the dominance, or what we call pecking order. That was surprising to me. But somehow Isaiah knew that could happen. Verse 14, it'll be like a hunted gazelle. Verse 15, anyone who's found will be thrust through, and anyone captured will fall by the sword. So you hear this echo regularly in every one of these verses. This is going to happen, and this is going to happen. But it's the same thing. It's biblically an amplification when lines are repeated or poetry is repeated to indicate, wait, no, I'm really talking. You're going to be thrust through. No, really, you're going to fall by the sword. This is a horrible way to die. We kind of make light of it because we've seen it in the movies so many times. Oh, yeah, you got stabbed. But when you're thrust through by the sword, when do you die? So if they thrust you through, say, your stomach or your lung, and it goes all the way through, it goes through your kidney, you know, you're going to have some organ failure. You're going to slowly die. When I think about death, you know, you want to stab me through my ear or something, you know, through the brain. I mean, it's all horrible, whatever it is. Stab through the heart. That sounds, I don't know, I guess okay. But you got a rib cage that's protecting you. And God did that to preserve us. When we get, I don't know, this is a slow death. A horrible death. To bleed out over hours, maybe days. But in the movies, you get stabbed and we got another scene to get to. Verse 16, their little ones also will be dashed to pieces before their eyes. This is not representing instant, I'm sorry, slow death. This is instant death. The dashed to pieces, again, that sounds like that judge's slice and dice and sent around to all the 12 tribes.
Yes, I know that
was
that story.
A horrible story, which we read when we studied Judges. Dashing to pieces. You know what you do to dash something to pieces? Where do you put that person? Well, you whack them onto something, a wall or a rock or a stone. You dash something to pieces by hitting it against something solid and firm. It's an image that you don't want to even imagine.
Yes.
Because these are little ones.
Yes.
These are innocent, the ones we should be protecting. And Babylon is actually destroying innocent children. It's coming back at the Babylonians for what they've done in kind to, well, they've done it to everybody. They're doing it. They're a global power. And the way you maintain your power is by devastating others. It's a horrible thing. Their children, the innocent. And I think about abortion today and how we are doing that very thing. God will not let that go on without being punished. It just doesn't, I don't see that. Their houses will be plundered and their wives ravished. This is obviously a violation. This is sexual immorality. Their houses plundered. That's not stealing. Their wives ravished. So there's nothing sacred. Everything has been ruined. So God says, I'm going to stir up some folks who are lesser against them. I'm going to raise up some enemies against the Babylonians who will thwart the onslaught of the Babylonians. They think they're the world power, but they're not. I am, he says. Any power that rises up against God's power eventually is going to go to ruin. Whether it was the Spanish of 1490 that had all the power, and 90 years later, they were empty and devoid and never again arose to be a world power. In 1588, their armada was destroyed. We think of England as a global power, and it certainly was. For hundreds of years, where are they today? Well, we could say world significance. Their number one authority, what England said in the day, 1850, they were the dominant force. 1900, they were. And so, Australia, we need you to go to war with us in South Africa against the Dutch. Come on, we're fighting. We're going to the Falklands. Come on, we're going somewhere. But if England said today to Australia or to the Canaries even, I mean, to whoever, we want to do this, they'd say, we'll take it under advisement. You know, England doesn't have the power at all that it used to. And I think you're right. I think it had to do with not only how they treated the Jews in World War II. Yeah, it's not only how they treated the Jews. It's also how they treat all kinds of people. So God will judge and diminish the power of those who misuse the power that he gives them. How does he do it? He stirs up, verse 17, the Medes against them, who will not value silver or take pleasure in gold. And their bows, that's probably bow like bow and arrow, but it's the same word for rainbow, will mow down the young men. They won't even have compassion on the fruit of the womb, nor will their eye pity children. In other words, compensation is coming back on the Babylonians through an unlikely source, the Medes. And Babylon, the beauty of kingdoms, this glorious thing will be like nothing, like Sodom and Gomorrah, turned to salt, empty, ruined. It will never be inhabited or lived in from generation to generation. Obviously, Babylon has been rebuilt, but for hundreds and hundreds of years, it was not.
That's right.
So that's what he's saying. He's not saying never in the word that we, you and I, would use to mean never. It just says not inhabited. It will not be inhabited or lived in for a long time. That's what generation to generation means. Ador vador. Okay? Nor will Aravi, the Arab, pitch his tent there, nor will shepherds make their flocks lie down there. Nobody will want to go there. It's an empty place. We start on the bare hill, we're going to end on a bare hill. Barren, barren, barren. And in fact, the only thing that's going to be left is verse 21 and 22, these weird creatures like owls, ostriches, and shaggy goats. Hebrew word, sa'ir, sa'irim. Ear. Anybody remember that word? It's also translated devils, demons, and satyrs. Seir. So there was all, you know, the devil always is pictured in certain eras with a goatee, which makes me a little nervous why we have one. Yeah. But the devil has the goat look on him, and it comes from this phrase. Will he be there? Look, it's just talking about ruin, and nothing will be left. Time will soon come when her days will not be prolonged. There's no pulling of her days, Yimashechu, no continuity. If you read this with any kind of Babylonian love, you are in trouble. With any kind of Babylonian pride, we are Babylonia, yes! You're going to say, I have no reason to rejoice in my heritage as a Babylonian. Because whatever it was that we received in this chapter, and in due course when it was enacted, it was because of some evil that had filled God's time up. Almost like you flip a sand timer over and it just keeps filling up the bottom section of the timer, an egg timer, whatever it is. And finally, it fills up and God says, time's up. Enough already. And I am going to bring on you what you've brought on others. That's fair. People say, you want to live that way? Here, we're going to let others live that way against you. Shame. So what do I recommend? That we don't live that way. That we live in a way that honors the living God, honors people. Whatever you see here, which is devastation, see what you can do in your life to be comprehensively fruitful rather than devastating to those around you. What can I do to benefit this guy, that gal? What can I do to make their life better, not my life better? What can I do for children so that they're not dashed in pieces? What can I do for wives so that they're not violated? What can I do for countries so that they hear the word of God before they hear the word of God's judgment? You live like that, you're going to be understanding, I think, the spirit of Isaiah, who wants us all to get it and live in a holy way. We're going to be those who are going to be bringing on this judgment to others. Because it's particularized there at the first, the oracle concerning Babylon, which Isaiah, the son of Amos, saw, then my guess is this particular section was definitively his, which he might have dictated. Others would be possibly words that others raise their hand and say, I saw something too. Well, let's put it in the Isaiah scroll. I have no problem with that. If Sennacherib and Hitler and Haman and Pharaoh had their way, we wouldn't be here as Jews.
Exactly.
But God will always preserve his people.
Exactly.
And the way to preserve, he just will. And we're graced. It's a great thing. Great thing. Thanks be to God.